Audio Journal is supported in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. We are a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
The Worcester Regional Transit Authority, also known as the WRTA, is a regional transit system that services the city of Worcester and the surrounding 36 communities in the central Massachusetts area, with a bus fleet that includes all-electric buses, as well as many diesel-electric hybrid buses. The second largest regional transit authority in Massachusetts, the WRTA offers reliable, comfortable, and safe transportation for traveling to work, shopping, school, medical appointments, and leisure activities. The WRTA also provides paratransit service for the elderly and disabled, as well as a variety of special services for those groups in the entire service area. For more information, visit the website at www.therta.com or call 508-791-9782.
What's going on in your town is important to you. Meetings that decide your taxes, changes in laws in your community, plans for new housing and businesses, and news about schools are all vital for you to know. Here on Audio Journal, we read many local community newspapers each week. In addition to the news of your community and area, you'll also hear about special events, stories about your neighbors, their businesses, their activities, and more. Stay in touch with your community on Audio Journal, broadcasting to print-impaired residents of central Massachusetts.
When Fred Plotkin talks about being a pleasure activist, it's about switching on our senses instead of living on autopilot.
We eat, but we don't savor. We hear, but we don't listen. We see, but we don't absorb. We touch, but we don't feel.
Coming up, Fred tells us why the area around Bologna in northeast Italy is his favorite place to eat in the entire world, and what he learned from the way they cook and prepare a meal.
Pork is like the music of Verdi. Nothing goes to waste.
Further south, the island of Sicily rates as a favorite place for Italians to go for a culinary adventure.
So we are what we eat, and Sicilians, actually, they have the best of the best because they have the best of different worlds.
We'll also explore Aero Island in Denmark, where cute and cozy are a way of life.
It's the landscape, it's the light, it's the buildings, it's the people.
It's all just ahead on Travel with Rick Steves. Each region of Italy boasts colorful traditions and amazing foods. But for Italophile Fred Plotkin, the area around the prosperous city of Bologna, called Emilia-Romagna, is a cut above them all. He'll explain in just a bit on today's Travel with Rick Steves. We'll also hear how the sunny island of Sicily is a favorite getaway for Italians from the mainland. But let's start today on an island in the cooler Baltic waters of Denmark. By the way, today's interviews were recorded before the pandemic began.
As the maritime industry declined, so did Denmark's Aero Island in the Baltic Sea. Today, the colorful centuries-old buildings of Aeroskobing are filled with busy shops, inns, and restaurants, and lots of happy visitors. Danish tour guide Nina Sefuzati joins us in our studio to talk about my favorite corner of Denmark. It's the island of Aero, and we're going to talk about why that's worth the visit. Nina, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Hi, hi.
So, hi, hi. There's a lot of islands in Denmark, and mm-hmm. there's something special about Aero.
What Completely.
Is it? What is it when you get to Aero? You just fall in love with it.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's part of the southern, we call it the southern islands, right?
Yeah. Because Germany is can't see it, but the next piece of land is Germany.
It's just across, right, isn't it? Yeah. And there are several little islands down there, and I remember going there with my parents when I was young on vacation. Aero just have something. It's the landscape, it's the light, it's the buildings, the people, obviously.
And the history, too.
And the history.
It had money. I suppose part of it is it had money. Therefore, it has a heritage and some beautiful vernacular architecture.
It was a city called Marstal, right, where they actually had big ships coming out and going all around the world. And
that was before steam-powered.
Exactly. Yeah.
So these are the old clipper ships with the big masts. And it has that sort of old seafaring elegance.
Completely. Yeah.
In fact, in my favorite museum is a ship in a bottle museum.
Yes.
Bottle Peter. He spent his life making these little delicate ships inside bottles.
Miniatures, yeah.
Aero is spelled A-E-R-O.
Mm-hmm.
And the capital city is Aeroskoping.
Aeroskoping.
And you get there by ferry from Svendborg
on the island of Fyn.
So if I'm in Copenhagen and I've got 3 or 4 days in Copenhagen and I want to get to the countryside, how do I get down to Aero from Copenhagen?
Well, either you rent a car, right? Mm-hmm. And you drive across the island where Copenhagen is situated, and you have a bridge crossing the Storebælt, the Grand Belt.
That's right. All the major islands are tied together with Storebælt means the Big Belt.
The Big Belt.
And that Storebælt continues even to Sweden, connecting Copenhagen.
That's the other side of Copenhagen. Yeah.
So basically you get in the car and you drive right down to Svendborg, and then you hop on an old little ferry.
Yeah. You might have to make a reservation in the high summer season, right?
But so and the island is small. The summit of the island is you hike up. It's only a few hundred yards.
Oh, the view, yes.
And then you go to the south coast and you get to that Vogelklimt.
Yeah, Vogelklimt. Yeah.
And then you feel a sense of the prehistoric history there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you have and that's everywhere in Denmark, obviously, right? First of all, it's a beautiful natural site.
Yeah.
And you go a little inland and you have the ting, right, where the people, let's say the Vikings,
so ting,
gathering.
A ting would be a gathering of people, a tribal gathering with the chief of the Vikings or whatever.
Yeah.
And what's very interesting to me is Christianity came to Scandinavia around the year, about 1,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, people were still having their pagan Nordic religions, and you have these tombs and these stone circles and these kind of things. And is it just coincidence that the churches are built on top of these pagan holy sites?
It's not a coincidence, is it?
No.
No. As anywhere else in Europe, right? When Christianity is coming in and they're just taking over the sacred sites.
Right.
So this was your sacred site, but you know what? Now it's our sacred site.
Because my favorite church, I think, the one we're thinking about in the countryside there, it's got this long stone, much older burial tomb, and that would have been a holy spot. And I can just, you get romantic, you can imagine people with their torches gathered around that. It's amazing. Nina Safusadi was born in Copenhagen. She married a Franco-Italian, and now she guides tours from her home base in southern France. She's telling us about the joys of Aero Island in her native Denmark right now on Travel with Rick Steves. So the trick for enjoying the island is to get on a bicycle.
Get on a bicycle? Actually, the buses are free.
They're free?
Completely. I mean, you can, if you don't want a bike, right?
Yeah.
But get a bike. That's my
biking
really,
is,
I mean, this is the thing to do on Aero. But if you don't feel like biking, you can walk, and the bus transportation is free. It's not a huge island, right?
So. Yeah. But there's a charm in the countryside. You find these little farms, and they've been the same in the same family for generations and generations.
Mm-hmm.
They're shaped like a U.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
To protect the animals and the people and the buildings themselves against the wind, because it is quite a windy place, isn't it?
So you've got the U facing away from the wind,
away
so the animals
the wind,
and the children and everybody can be sheltered.
Yep.
On one side you got the animals, the other side you got the people.
Mm-hmm, exactly. We have an island that's pretty flat, right? So the wind obviously will be present.
And then biking around, you come to little stalls where they're selling things, honey and local produce, and it's on the honors system.
Yeah.
They just have a jar there. Take what you want and pay for it.
But we believe in that, right? We believe in the fact that you would be honest. You would leave the price that it says on the tag and that you don't want to steal the money or just go without putting any money in the jar.
Does that survive in the 2020s?
It does. It does. I mean, you would be, if anybody saw you stealing something or stealing money from a jar, it would be really, I mean, you would be a social outsider for the rest of your life.
What scum of the earth?
Completely.
Stealing strawberries.
How could you?
And not pay $5 for it, you know? My favorite part of Aero, I got to say, it's the town, Aeroskoping.
Yeah.
It's just a fairy tale town. Beautiful little B&Bs, wonderful restaurants.
Mm.
Charming little museums. The museums are just like somebody's house is just filled with some eccentric person's knickknacks, you know?
Yeah.
It's a town that you just settle into aeroscoping and you're thankful to be there.
Completely. You are in the moment, right? Yeah, you enjoy the moment.
You enjoy the moment. And sort of the people who live there, there's a little tiny beach with little huts lined up, and they're all pastel colored. And they're just
so
big
beautiful.
Enough for, it's like a picnic table with a couple of beds next to it, and that's just the hut.
Yeah, you're not supposed to live there, right? It's just for the day. So it's very popular places to go.
I love to stroll out there during the sunset. The kids are splashing in the water. Yeah. It's a delightful Danish moment. Hygge, that little wonderful Danish word.
Very hygge.
If anything was appropriate for hygge, it is arrow. It is cute. Cute and cozy. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Nina Sefuzakti. We're talking about Aero in Denmark. Our phone number is 877-333-7425. And Stephen's calling in from Cudahy, Wisconsin. Stephen, thanks for your call.
Hi, Rick.
Hey, do you have you been to Aero?
I have. My wife and I, we spent 4 nights in aeroscobing in 2018. I believe my wife took a picture of every door in town.
I love those doors.
Yeah. They're incredibly beautiful. We took the night watchman tour. Mm-hmm. We took the free bus all over the island. We particularly love the Brenniga Church
with its
frescoes. We went to Flask Peter, the bottle. Shipping a bottle
okay.
Museum.
You remember him.
Yes. I mean, it's just so incredibly romantic because, we were there in June and all the flowers were in bloom and it was just spectacular.
Hey, Stephen, tell me about the Night Watchman's tour because I thought that was a wonderful new thing to do after dinner or in the early evening there in aeroscoping.
It is. It's an old local. He gives a tour and some nights it's in Danish. Some nights in English, and we, of course, took the English tour.
Mm-hmm.
And, he told us things about the town that, only a local would know.
So it's an intimate chance to walk with a local, and it's a perfect thing for a town like that. It's just an hour, and you make a friend, and you learn that the red doors are made with painted with ox blood or something like that. And why are the windows so small and all those intimate details? Stephen, did you enjoy any of the food in aeroscoping?
We did. We had wonderful meals. We also, we bought groceries in the local store, and we just sat on the beach. And,
perfect.
Or there's picnic tables in the town square, and we would just sit there and have a lunch, and we just had a wonderful time.
I think they know how to live well. Stephen, thanks for your call.
Thank you, Rick.
Happy travels.
Thank you, Stephen.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Nina Sefuzakti. She's our Danish guide for the island of Aero. And Nina, Aero has had a lot of energy lately, and I'm talking solar power and wind power. Tell us just about the initiative there. I think they were trying to be completely solar and wind powered.
It's like the rest of Denmark, by the way, that they are trying to get away from all the polluting.
Fossil
fuels. When you bike along the beach on the east side of the island, for instance, just south of Aeroskøbing, there's this huge solar panel park,
massive solar panels. Yeah.
And they're getting there. They're getting there. It's almost there. It's almost there. And it's not completely, it's not 100%.
So right, almost completely solar and wind powered.
Yeah.
And there's a regeneration project that's bringing a lot of new life to town. What is the regeneration project?
It's so interesting. Aeroskøbing was kind of dying out, like so many other cities. We talk about the rotten banana. It's the outskirts of Denmark.
Yeah.
Now away from
Copenhagen. Everybody is sucking into the big city.
Yeah. Right. And it's been abandoned and there was no more shipping and there was no more this and no more that. And the people in Aeroskøbing, when they figured out that the last bank was actually closing down, they couldn't even have a bank anymore. What they did was incredible because all these volunteers got together. The retired electrician was doing stuff and they thought, no, let's get this going. Let's get some life. And in the main square of Aeroskøbing, you have this incredible place that is a bar, restaurant, shop, a beer brewery.
Oh, yeah.
They have the most perfect beer that you can get there.
So there's just a new energy
and
for small businesses.
They're doing whiskey. I mean, and all that, again, brought more people, right? So things are happening. So let's see what's happening down there.
Regeneration, that's the name. And I understand there's some special law that attracts a lot of people for their weddings.
Yeah.
What is that? What's going on there? Because there's a lot of wedding parties there.
Well, you can do that. You don't have to do that in Aero, right? It's just that Aero is such a romantic setting.
Yeah.
But it is easier to get married in Denmark if you're from two different nationalities. So if you have different nationalities, you don't have to come with 50 different documents and, going back and
So you have
three generations, right?
You have the KISS wedding. The KISS wedding. Mm-hmm. Keep it simple.
Keep it simple. Completely.
That's right. Go to Denmark.
Yeah, and then Aeroskobing figured out, because it's such a romantic setting, why don't we have this whole wedding, you know, enterprise, actually.
So this is part of regeneration?
It's part of the regeneration.
So there's, what, hundreds of weddings?
Hundreds of weddings. I can't remember how many nationalities, but it's really interesting. And you ask anybody.
What a celebration coming to this remote island in Denmark. So fascinating. Mm. Nina Sefusati, thank you so much for a look at Aero Island. And
so welcome.
You know, because we're all going to go see Hans Christian Andersen and we're going to all go to Copenhagen.
Mm, but please come to Aero.
Round it out with a visit to the island of Aero.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Tusen tak. Tusen tak.
Det var så lidt rik. Thank you. Hi. Er nun stille Paradies,
gewartet zu Danmarks Ries. Our next stops are in Italy. Fred Plotkin has been celebrating the magnificence of Italian food and culture all his adult life. He'll tell us which region, above all others, is the pinnacle of what makes Italy so special for him. And a pair of Italian tour guides share a few reasons why they enjoy going to the island of Sicily as much as foreign visitors do. We're at 877-333-RICK at Travel with Rick Steves. Italy is so popular, and everybody seems to go to the same places. Venice, Florence, Rome, Tuscany, the Riviera, and so on. More and more important is the challenge to leave the crowds, and Emilia Romagna might just do the trick. This is one of Italy's and Europe's wealthiest regions. Emilia Romagna is a part of Italy that includes two of Italy's great university cities, lots of Etruscan history, some top-notch cultural and culinary pleasures. Italophile Fred Plotkin joins us now on Travel with Rick Steves to tell us why Emilia Romagna is one of his favorite places to visit, not only in Italy, but anywhere. Fred, buongiorno. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for asking me to talk about Emilia Romagna. It's the region I've spent the most time in Italy. I went to college in Bologna, and when I came back to the States after living in Italy for many years, I wanted to write a book about it. This was about 1981. And I said, I want to write a book about Emilia Romagna. And the editor said, is that your girlfriend? They did not even know that it was an Italian region. Things have changed radically in that, thanks to you, thanks to food writers, thanks to me, people know that Italy has 20 regions.
Yeah.
This region is one of excellence in every single thing it touches. Whether it's cinema, whether it's opera, Verdi was from there, Fellini was from there, Giorgio Armani is from there. It's of that level of quality, and most people will say to you that the best food in Italy is in their hometown plus Bologna.
Hmm.
It's fabulous.
I just love talking with you because, I love your book. You wrote Italy for the Gourmet Traveler, and much as I am passionate about learning about a culture through the history and the art, you are the man for learning about a culture through its cuisine. And, of course, that's a big part of I would imagine, your attraction to Emilia-Romagna. We'll talk about food in a moment. First of all, you call yourself a pleasure activist. What does that mean? And then does that have something to do with why you appreciate Emilia-Romagna so much?
They're definitely connected, and if I did not realize that in myself before, it certainly happened in Bologna when I was 20. Pleasure activism, to me, is about the fact that we've been given this fantastic gift of our five senses, and most people barely use them.
Hmm.
We taste, we eat, but we don't savor. We hear, but we don't listen. We see, but we don't absorb. We touch, but we don't feel. My lightning bolt realization was, let's take advantage of these gifts. And in Bologna, in Emilia-Romagna in general, all the senses are activated. Activism for me comes from activation of the senses. And pleasure is a good thing. Hedonism we can talk about, but pleasure is a good thing and is one of God's gifts that we want to take advantage of. And Bologna and Emilia-Romagna seem designed for that.
Okay, so let's talk about this region now. Emilia-Romagna. We know Venice, we know Tuscany and Florence. This is the area in between, right?
It is, and in fact, the rail line goes Florence, Bologna, Venice. But in the other direction, near Milan is the Via Emilia, which is a Roman road that went from basically the Po River all the way down to the Adriatic Sea, linking important cities such as Piacenza, Parma, Reggio Emilia, Modena, Bologna, and then out to the sea.
Hmm.
Rimini is on the sea. There are great towns, especially Ferrara, which I love, which is not on the Via Emilia. And throughout the region are small duchies. A town that I love, you may have been there, called Castel Arquato in the province of Piacenza.
Hmm.
You have these gems everywhere, these little towns that are rich in culture, rich in agriculture and food tradition. And the level of cooking in this region, to me, is unparalleled anywhere on earth, not Japan, not France. No gathering of places that I can name has better quality cooking day in and day out than Emilia-Romagna.
So you're talking about cooking. Is that different than the quality of the ingredients or the tradition of the cuisine? Or do you mean all of that?
Well, the quality of the ingredients is essential. Julia Child said that great cooking is 85% shopping.
Huh.
And to me, the greatest food markets I know anywhere in the world are in Bologna. It's not fancy.
Mm-hmm.
But for example, if I were to go to a market and say, I would like that tomato, in Bologna, they would not say, how many do you want? They would say, what are you using it for? And I would say, to make sauce. And they would say, no, you want this for salad. You want that tomato for sauce. You want that tomato to put up to age for the winter, whatever. Every single ingredient that they could point to. I didn't know that fennel could be male or female and how the flavor is different, how to select a fish, how to cut a fish, how cheese should be served. They are so passionate about every ingredient that they automatically assume you are too, and they want you to know everything they know. So my education really in cooking and knowledge of ingredients happened in Bologna.
Now, Fred, does that present you a little frustration when you want to enjoy something that's bolognese or parmigiano or something and you're not in Emilia-Romagna and you can't get the same quality of the ingredients that makes the magic?
Handmade pasta in Emilia-Romagna is one of the great gifts to our culture. And knowing how to do that is like learning to make strudel in Vienna. Once learned, you can never accept anything less. So therefore, Bologna and Emilia-Romagna for me turned me into a home cook.
Hmm.
And I won't eat out Italian food terribly often. I eat out foods that I don't prepare. I don't know how to make Indian or Japanese food. So that I will dine out with, but I would rather cook Italian at home. And the great thing in Italy, all over, but certainly in Bologna and Emilia-Romagna, you take cooking classes. You learn how to make sfoglia. They're incredibly proud. And frankly, they want to maintain the tradition. And if Italian young men and women won't learn it, but if people from Asia, North and South America and elsewhere in Europe are willing to learn it, better. That way we maintain the tradition. This is culture.
Maintaining the tradition. You know, in Italy, in small towns, I've seen there's that passion for this. I'll never forget going to, I forget the town, but I was in a little town and there was a festival where the older kids were teaching the younger kids how to make a good ravioli. And it was designed to pass the passion and the expertise and the flair down to the next generation. So it stayed strong.
That might have been Recco in Liguria, where it was destroyed in World War II. And the only legacy they had was their food. And every child in Recco, where ravioli is from, are taught to make it so that they will teach the next generation.
There you go. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Fred Plotkin, and Fred's written this marvelous book for anybody that wants to appreciate Italian culture through the cuisine. It's called Italy for the Gourmet Traveler. Our phone number is 877-333-7425. Kate's on the phone from Austin in Texas. Kate, thanks for your call.
Hi, thanks for letting me call in. I'm a big fan of both of you. I lived for a year in Bologna, and it completely altered my relationship with food. I felt like everything shifted in my eyes with food when I first got there. Just the way you eat food, the way you prepare food, the way that you will sit around the table, and it's an event. I was lucky enough also to live with two Italians. One was local. And I asked her sister for her recipe for ragu, and she looked at me and she said, "We don't do recipes. What's the recipe?" And she just sort of described her process, and that's still the same quote-unquote recipe I use today for my ragu, which takes several hours and is worth every minute of those hours. But I also wanted to say that I feel like a lot of people don't appreciate Bologna as a spot on the tourist trail. And it's really a city of hidden beauty.
From a sightseeing point of view. In other words, things to see rather than to eat.
Right.
Yeah.
One of the things I think is really remarkable, so, you know, Tuscany, Florence, and Venice, everybody knows, everybody goes. But if you walk under the Portici of Bologna, you'll see incredible, beautiful history that just sort of jumps out on you, like the Piazza Cavour, the gardens, the parks. Margherita is a really beautiful park. San Domenico is a beautiful church, which has two tiny little Michelangelo sculptures in there, and people just don't go. They just don't think about
it. Right. And when you say Portici, by the way, those Portici, if I'm correct, that's the famous arcaded walkways that Bologna is noted for. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, there are about 40 kilometers of them in the city, and they are a lifesaver in the horrible winters and in the horrible summers. Spring and fall are the most beautiful times to go to Bologna. So even basing yourself in Bologna, it's an hour to Florence. It's 2 hours to Venice. It's easy to get everywhere from there. The connections are mm-hmm. very, very easy.
You know, I think Florence and Venice are getting tougher and tougher just from a masses of tourism point of view. And you're just part of the mob, whether you like it or not, in so many ways. But in Bologna, I would imagine it just feels more Italian.
It does. I feel like I was forced to learn how to live like an Italian because I was living in Bologna.
Mm-hmm.
My sister studied in Florence for a semester, and she didn't come back with a word of Italian.
Right.
Then I spent a year in Bologna. I had to learn Italian. I had to negotiate in the market, in the food market. It was a much more Italian experience. And I think getting an apartment, living there, shopping in the market, making some meals, it's really a remarkable city that I think falls off a lot of people's radars when they think, I'm going to go to Italy and I'm going to see all the spots. But it's just for the food alone. The year I lived in Italy, I had one bad meal, and that was entirely my fault.
All right. Thanks for cluing us in along with Fred
about
Bologna.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Our phone number is 877-333-7425, and Martina's calling in from Atlanta. Hey, Martina.
Hey, Rick. Hey, Fred. I'm a huge fan. And thanks to your book, I made a food pilgrimage to Emilia-Romagna a few years ago. I thought I knew everything there was about it. My grandmother is Piemontese, and I know about that cuisine. But after reading your book, it was a food pilgrimage. I went to Modena. I wanted to see how balsamico vinegar happens. And boy, it's nothing like what we have in the stores here in the U.S. And I also visited Bologna, and it is a beautiful city. And it is a city where I felt like I was living as a temporary local. I went to the Ugo Bassi market and just marveled at the quality of the food there.
Talk about that, Martina, because I just think these markets in that part of Italy just are, they're hard to appreciate unless you're actually there. What's an experience you remember from the market that really made it vivid?
Well, what I love about Italy in general, Italians, is their pride in their work.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a lovely conversation with a man in a cheese shop. He had on a white fedora and the white apron, and, you know, I had a little Italian. I had to learn how to speak it because my cousins in Piemonte don't speak English. It's, most of my Italian's gone now, but pretty good 4 years ago when I went there. And they loved that I tried to communicate, and they're so polite. In other countries, when I try to speak the language, they immediately go into English. In Italy, they listen. They start to reply in Italian until they see my eyes glaze over, and then they go into English.
That's so great. That's so fun to be in the market and connecting like that.
Yes.
Thanks, Martina, for your call.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye-bye now.
Bye now. The author of Italy for the Gourmet Traveler and Opera 101, Fred Plotkin's telling us about his favorite region to eat in Italy right now on Travel with Rick Steves. Fred explains how portico doorways are a signature look in the city of Bologna. That's in an extra you can hear at ricksteves.com/radio. Hey, Fred, you know, when you think of Bologna, a lot of Americans think of bologna, about the cheapest meat you can get. But it's actually not a low-end meat in Italy, is it? Tell us about the equivalent.
Well, it's from Bologna. It's called mortadella.
Mortadella.
And mortadella is a combination of pork, spices, pistachio, and little bits of the best fat you'd want to eat. It's very healthy fat. And it comes two ways, either in slices, these big round slices, or in chunks. It's really the only pork product I can think of that can be served either way. And mortadella can be chopped up and put into pasta fillings. It's a wonderful thing, but frankly, let's not forget prosciutto di Parma and the delicious salamis that come from that area. And then there's something magnificent called culatello, which comes from the butt of the pig. And it's made only in a couple of towns. One of them is called Zibello. It's on the Po River. And prosciutto is long drying for 14 months of the leg of the pork. In contrast, culatello is aged in moist environments near the Po River and takes on a more tangy but absolutely delicious taste. It's a slightly different part of the pig. And I could take you from town to town in Emilia-Romagna, and you'll discover different pork products. They always said that pork is like the music of Verdi. Nothing goes to waste. And I do want to commend, there are so many towns I could commend, but two more, Ravenna and Ferrara. People don't visit them that much. Ravenna was the capital of the Western Byzantine Empire. It has the most magnificent mosaics in Europe, and Dante is buried there. And Ferrara, to me, is the great undiscovered town. Obviously, the food is magnificent. It was the home of the royal Este family, but also of the Borgia family, as in Lucrezia Borgia. They built incredible buildings, palaces, and so on. It has the longest live Jewish community going back to the Middle Ages of anywhere in Italy. And they've played a very important role throughout history. And unfortunately, many were killed during the Holocaust. But it was the Jews who, on a couple of occasions, paid off foreign occupiers to prevent them from destroying Ferrara. Ferrara has incredible pears. That's just, if you like pears, they're the best you'll ever taste. The palaces, the music festivals. It's a city of 130,000 people. After Bologna, it has the most important university. It's from 1391. It has a museum of the Italian resistance. It has so much. It's still a city where people go around on bicycles. And frankly, it gets very few visitors, and it's only about a half hour from Bologna.
Ferrara. That's good to know.
Yeah.
Ravenna also has a lot of, it's sort of a biking city. It just feels quiet and peaceful, and it's got those sumptuous mosaics that go back 1,500 years in Ravenna. I'll never forget, you know, the Roman portrayal of Jesus is without a beard, and the medieval portrayal is with a beard, and there's that cusp in the 6th century or so, and you see a church that has mosaics that have both the beardless and the bearded Jesus that are the earliest church art you'll see in Europe, and it's just vivid, like it was made yesterday in Ravenna. I guess that was the capital of the Byzantine. It was sort of a leading city in Byzantium, wasn't it?
It was indeed. It was the capital of the Western Byzantine Empire.
So there's a chance to get a real dose of the exquisite civilizations of the East after Rome fell by going to Ravenna. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been talking with Fred Plotkin, and Fred's the author of Italy for the Gourmet Traveler. And Fred, you know, we've been talking about Emilia-Romagna, the region between Florence and Tuscany and Venice, and how underrated it is and how it's got all the great stuff of Italy just sparkling. You write that something about Emilia-Romagna is about the lusty pursuit of excellence in all things. It seems like that's true.
It is. Whatever you want to experience and learn about the best of Italy, you can do all of that in just that region. I'm not a driver, but people who like sports cars, they're made in Emilia-Romagna, the Ferraris, the Alfa Romeos, the best pasta, the best cooking, the greatest musicians. It's all there.
And so am I, as soon as I can manage that. Fred Plotkin, thanks so much, and buon viaggi.
Thank you, Rick.
Italian tour guides tell us why they enjoy taking people to the island of Sicily so much. It's next on Travel with Rick Steves. If Italy is the boot, well, of course, Sicily is the football. The island of Sicily is layered with a history and a style that makes it one of the liveliest and tastiest corners of Italy. Our Italian guides, one from Rome and one from Naples, join us in the studio right now to tell us why Sicily is one of their favorite parts of Italy to explore and to recommend a touring itinerary to help you capture the essence of what the island of organized chaos is all about. Susanna Peverchini and Alfredo Vitali join us, and thank you both very much for being here.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, thank you.
Alfredo, give us the big picture. What is unique about Sicily compared to the rest of Italy that you and Susanna live in?
Well, the uniqueness of the island is for sure the different layers of different cultures that have been there and have been meeting on that place, which is relatively not so big, but it's amazing the quantity of different civilizations that have been there trying to conquer, that nobody really managed to do it so to the end. And this makes such a beautiful layers of cultures that live together and come up to life every day, just walking around.
So it all
around.
Mixes together, doesn't it?
Yeah, basically, yes.
A lot of people like to say it's like a lasagna or a layer cake. Now, Susanna, when we think of Sicily, just very quickly, go through the civilizations that have left their imprint on Sicily.
Well, let's say that apart from the local people, mm-hmm. they were there. So the island was divided into three different, the Sicans, the Sicilians, and the Illyrians. Then we started to have a mix, a melting pot.
Who came in? Because there's many invaders.
Well,
just who came in?
Yeah, just Phoenicians. We had the Greeks, the Romans, the ancient Romans. Then we had the Muslim domination that lasted more or less three centuries. On top of that, the Normans, the Spanish later on. Then we have to consider that Sicily was also very important when it came to the unification of Italy. So I'm jumping into
But you see Sicily in the middle of the Mediterranean there. It's kind of logical. It would be many civilizations coming in like the tide, right?
Yes, exactly, because being in the middle of the Mediterranean was really the place where people would gather, and it was at a revenue that was even much more than England on his own during the good days.
So it was a very important place from a trade point of view.
Absolutely.
And Alfredo, even in ancient times, I understand some of the most important cities in the ancient world were in Sicily.
Yeah, absolutely. It's special, for example, for the Phoenician civilization, because the Phoenicians got there on the western part of the island, close to Trapani on the island of Mozia. And Mozia is one of the few places where Phoenician remains are still visible. Because
so
you know
who
that
the
Romans,
the Phoenicians, we hear that word a lot. But
well, they came from Northern Africa, Northern African coast. It used to be there. Carthage was the original city on the coast.
Is this Carthage?
Carthage, yes.
So the Carthaginians came over.
Came over and they colonized the little island in front of Trapani called Mozia. And then from there, the
Because that's the
western
only
part.
Carthaginian site I've ever seen in Europe, I believe.
Well, because that's actually one that's remained, because the Romans attacked the northern part. And they till the point that Carthaginians had to be destroyed.
Now, both of you look at Sicily from Naples and from Rome. What do you think of the island today? The people, the temperament, the cuisine. What does it look like from Naples and from Rome, Susanna?
Well, you know, to me, Sicily is so different from Rome, even though Rome is some sort of invisible borderline between the north and the south. Because from Rome going all the way down, everything intensifies. The chaos, the disorganization, I have to say.
The chaos.
Yes, so anyway.
This is funny because Italians often say the word chaos like cows.
Yes.
So I always think C-O-W-S, so the cows intensify. And that's why we got the wonderful mozzarella.
Exactly. So for me, Sicily is intensified emotions. There are certain things that you can only see in Sicily. And you know, now it comes to my mind that among the many mosaics, Roman mosaics that I've seen in my life, the best so far have been the ones in Piazza Armerina. Because they
this
have
is a Casale, what is that?
Villa del Casale.
It's the Roman mosaics in the middle of Sicily. It's an incredible thing. Yeah.
It is incredible, especially for the colors, the preservation. So what I'm trying to say that Sicily has the power to attract people because of the diversity, because of the history, of course, but the history is the base that created also the incredible cuisine. So we are what we eat, and Sicilians, actually, they have the best of the best because they have the best of different worlds. So they have Arabic influences. They have the best pastries, I have to say, in Italy. So I don't want to go deeper into food because probably you have other questions, but to me, Sicily is the quintessential, is the very best and the very worst at the same time can be.
Okay, so Alfredo, let's talk about that from your perspective. Napoli, Naples.
Yeah.
To me, Naples is pretty cows. I mean, chaos.
Is.
But you look further south and it makes Naples look kind of stable.
Well, it is definitely chaotic, my city. But in a way, I really feel very close to Palermo, for example. And you have to consider that Palermo and Napoli, they've been together in one of the biggest kingdoms that were in Italy before unification.
Was that the
kingdom of the two Sicilies?
And
called.
To this day, you have a good boat connection from Naples.
I have a boat connection that goes every night, and it's really nice for people that need to commute sometimes.
It's a wonderful way
to get
down to
Palermo. It is very, very nice. So we are close in many ways, but also I have to say that Sicily is even more, has even more layers than Napoli has. I mean, I come from a city that has a lot of layers. I mean, Napoli was founded by the Greeks and then the Romans, and then we had all the medieval time and so on. But in Sicily, you can find also the Phoenician influence we don't have, for example. And you find also, as we said, other parts of the Arabic influence never arrived really in Napoli, for example.
What about the organized crime and the corruption that is a stereotype of Sicily? Is that yesterday or is it still, does it deserve that reputation of corruption?
I will say that there is for sure still a big influence on the island. What is different now is that people have actually reckoned this problem and they try to fight it in everyday life and they also try to get out of this, you know, parallel system to the state. And
what is this parallel system? Are we talking organized crime?
Organized crime.
Before there was two governments, really. Yeah, there was the government you paid taxes to, and there's the government that takes, security money from you and so on.
Yeah, in exchange of protection, and this started with
the shepherd. So that has changed now. I understand that the organized
has changed. There have been actually turning points on this. And one big one was 1992 when the two judges were killed, and also the priest, the famous priest in Sicily, was killed the same year. And this was the moment where people got to the point to say enough.
So when the public abandons organized crime, because before it had a little bit of the Robin Hood aspect where...
In a way, the Robin Hood aspect, but maybe this was only at the beginning, and then it became more kind of an habit, a bad habit. You know, bad habits, when they get in, it's difficult to kick them out.
But those atrocities, when respected public servants were murdered, the people said enough. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Susanna Perrucchini and Alfredo Vitali. We're talking about Sicily from an Italian perspective. Our phone number is 877-333-7425. And Jean from Damariscotta in Maine is on the line. Jean, thanks for your call.
Thanks. Nice talking to you, Rick. I just returned from Italy. I was in Italy itself for 9 weeks, and then I was 3 weeks in Sicily.
Wow, 3 weeks in Sicily. What was your impression?
I absolutely loved it. I travel a lot, and over the years, I've heard the good, the bad, and the ugly about Sicily. And I decided to go see it for myself. And I'm so glad I did, because I was totally enthralled with it. I think it's a beautiful place. And I was in Taormina alone for the first week. And then friends arrived, and we rented a van, and we had your book. And so we did everything you told us to do.
So that would be, you would probably do Palermo, you might do Monreal, the beautiful church outside of Palermo, Agrigento with the temples, the Roman mosaics at Villa Romana de Casale, and maybe Syracuse, and of course Mount Etna.
We did Syracuse, and then we did go to the towns you mentioned. We also went to Cefalù. Is that how you say it? Cefalù?
Cefalù.
Oh, I love Cefalù. What did you think about Cefalù?
I loved it. Yeah. Absolutely loved it. It was fascinating. And one place that we didn't see in your book that we went to was Erice.
Yeah, it's the stoniest place I've ever been. It's like a dream. It's like a dream where the whole world is little pebbles all glued together.
Exactly. The weather was absolutely beautiful, and truly it was the best food I had in Italy.
You know, the food is amazing. Life is a celebration of food there. Alfredo, when you take groups around, Alfredo, how do you turn them on with the food?
Well, the best experience, for example, when you are in Palermo or in Catania also, is to go to the markets. That's really amazing. I mean, you know, the colors, the flowers and the scents and whatever you go, just the feeling of walking around and interacting with people, tasting everything.
He's selling boiled bits of the cow. Bolito, here, have a piece of the ear and you can just...
One of our favorite places was the fish market in Catania.
Catania's fish market is a photographer. Delight.
Excellent. And we had dinner in one of the restaurants in the fish market later that night. And it was like the fish jumped right out of the water onto your plate.
I mean, it was
so fresh. It was absolutely marvelous.
And Susanna, when you're with a group taking them around Sicily, how do you impress them with the food?
Well, you know, to be honest, you don't have to do much to impress people. You just have to take them, you know, to the markets, have a taste of whatever they want to taste. It is true that for Americans at the beginning can be tough to understand that. Especially of animals, we eat everything. So it can be liver, can be the brain. But once they try, if they're daring or they're courageous to try, they love it.
The man singing bolito, I think that means boiled, boiled bits of cow. He gave me a slice of the nose.
Yeah.
It was actually very nice.
Yes.
I didn't have any of the bolito anything. I had mostly fish.
What about the sweets, Jean? How about the cannoli?
Oh. And I'm not a big fan of cannolis, not in this country, in America at any rate, but the cannolis over there, I mean, they are so fresh.
I was going to say the same thing.
And they don't put the cream in until the last minute, which makes a big difference.
Perfect. I stay away from cannoli when it's not worth the calories. But in Sicily, I don't care what your diet
is. It's worth it.
But you want it fresh, you want that ricotta put in it fresh right before your very eyes.
Yeah, it must be crunchy the outside.
Oh. Jean, thank you so much for taking us on a little review of your beautiful trip in Sicily.
My pleasure.
Take care. Happy travels.
Thank you.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been celebrating Italy. It sounded like Jean was sent to us by the Sicily Tourist Board there. She had such a good trip, and that's not unusual. If you go down to Sicily, you're going to have some heat. You're going to have a little bit of chaos. You're going to have a very friendly welcome, great food, and no real crowds.
No.
I don't have many trouble with the crowds in Sicily. You have huge trouble with the crowds in Venice, Florence, and Rome. Sicily is about half the price and about a quarter of the crowds.
Yes, it is absolutely true. In fact, Catania and Palermo can be the two big cities, and they are, but you never feel, or at least I never felt, that it was as overwhelming as Rome and Florence and Venice can be, especially on high season. So there is always a space to be. There is always a moment you can sit down and have a coffee, watch for people. And I believe that this is one of the many beauties that Sicily can offer to people, that they are travelers, but they don't want to be too stressed, because crowds can tire people.
I had images from my earlier days of traveling of Palermo being not very comfortable, especially after dark. It was just run down, and it had this reputation of, you know, organized crime. I've been there quite a bit the last few years, and you go to those markets, and they're a festival of life. And then after dinner, you walk back to the same market, and it's a whole different personality. It's the young people out, the wonderful bars, the beautiful, trendy little corners, and under the stars. It's some sort of a traveler's dream come true. But you've got to get out of the hotel. You've got to walk.
Actually, Palermo, especially. So, for example, the Botanical Garden in Palermo is another amazing place where to go. Easy to reach, even just walking distance from the center.
And the center used to be covered in soot and pollution. I remember the Quattro Corners.
Quattro Canti.
The four corners. It used to be just caked in black. And now it's peeled free, and you see the beautiful...
It's been cleaned up, and also they've done also pedestrian street.
Pedestrian only, so they stopped the traffic.
That stopped the traffic. It's much easier to walk around. Makes it nicer in the evening, as you said. You can feel very, very comfortable to walk around.
Well, you know, to me, Palermo, in the last few years that I've been going there with the tours, I can see that there is a little revolution. It's not a big one, as in Italy, we don't have big revolution, so everything must be a little bit softer. Yeah. But little by little, I can see that new little places are open, younger people are around. As you said, a square can be a market during the day, and then it becomes like a lounge, a nice lounge.
That's a good word for it, a lounge. And the children are out, it's cool, everybody's relaxed.
I've seen like a little renaissance in Palermo. Palermo still has, let's face it, like dark alleyways that they're not necessarily dangerous. They're stinky and dirty. But
it's the same way with the old part of Syracuse.
Ortigia.
Ortigia used to be a no-go zone.
Absolutely.
You would not cross that bridge to that little island.
Only 20 years ago.
Even the police didn't want to go there. It was ruled by the underbelly of society.
Yes.
And now is one of the best areas to be in Sicily. And everybody wants to be there. It's very international. It's open. It's pedestrian. It's nice. New businesses, cafes, restaurants.
Ortigia, the old center of Syracuse. And I love the passeggiata in Italy. And when you like the passeggiata, go to Sicily.
Yeah, it's all you need. Just a walk around.
We're looking at Sicily. It's one of the favorite getaway destinations for many of our listeners on Travel with Rick Steves, and for Italians as well. Our guests are tour guides Alfredo Vitali, who lives in the countryside near Naples, and Susanna Perucchini, who's based in Rome. Our guides explain how Sicily has a special relationship with the rest of Italy in an extra to today's interview. You can hear it on our website at ricksteves.com/radio. And just a reminder, our conversation was recorded before the outbreak of the global pandemic. Our phone number is 877-333-7425, and Courtney's on the phone in Portland, Oregon. Courtney, thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, what was your experience in Sicily?
Well, I haven't been to Sicily. My husband and I love food, and we love ancient history, and we are trying to plan a 2-week trip there someday, like to rent a car and drive around. And this conversation has made me both a little nervous and reassured me, because we spent a day at Napoli like maybe 6 years ago, and it was wild. We found it very crazy. And so to hear Sicily described as sort of Napoli on steroids makes me a little bit nervous.
Well, I wouldn't drive in Naples. I can't think of a worse place to drive anywhere as in Naples. So you don't want to have a car in the big cities of Sicily. But a car is wonderful in the countryside of Sicily. You'd be in fact, Sicily is overbuilt from a traffic infrastructure. They've got bigger roads than they have enough traffic to use them, I think. What would you say, Susanna?
Well, I would say that definitely the big cities, Palermo and Catania, I would ideally park the car and then start walking because it's very manageable. Palermo is bigger, is the capital, but still, whatever you want to see, it's more or less in the radius of the center.
You know, what you could do is you could fly into one of the big cities, Syracuse or Palermo, because you don't really need to see Palermo and Syracuse. You can do one or the other and then pick up your car on the way out. And then for 1 week with your car, you can visit all of the countryside sites. And when you visit those famous sites in the countryside, your car is a blessing. When you have a car in Palermo or Syracuse, it's a curse.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Right.
When would you recommend we go? Because I've seen, like, it could be green at a certain season, but we don't want to go when it's really hot. Is there a particularly good time to go?
I will say that springtime, late springtime, so I will say like April, May, it would be like best time. And also again, end of September, October, beautiful months, especially if you plan to travel by car and drive around. Those are the best months. It's not too hot. There is not too many people around and you can really enjoy the structure of the island, which is made actually to be discovered. You have to stop in the little places. You have to, you know, to go around. You have to go and get on both sides of the island, the eastern and the western. Go to Trapani. Trapani is such a special place and not everybody talks about that. And the islands which are in front of Trapani, the Egadi Islands, they're amazing. And Favignana is one of the most wonderful places I've ever been.
Courtney, nice. I would say the most important thing is if you can avoid July and August, it's a good idea because it's very hot.
Yeah.
It's brutally hot.
Yeah.
All right, Courtney, thanks for your call and best wishes in your travels in the future.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been talking about Sicily with Susanna Perrocchini and Alfredo Vitali. Thank you so much for joining us. And it's great to know that you can see Italy and then you can get more of Italy with a little extra twist when you head south.
Yes, thank you. Arrivederci.
Ciao.
Thank you very much. Ciao, a presto. Ciao.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington by Tim Tatton, Casmara Hall, and Donna Bardsley. Andrew Wakeling manages our website. Radio affiliate relations are by Sheila Gerzoff. Our theme music is by Jerry Frank. Thanks to the Radio Foundation in New York City for their help this week. We'll look for you again next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.
Do you need to contact the Massachusetts Attorney General's Office? The Attorney General's Office deals with a wide range of issues, including elder services, civil rights, fair labor, health care, insurance and financial services, housing, open meeting laws, public charities, and victim compensation. If you aren't sure who to call, an information specialist can direct you if you call the main switchboard. The main switchboard is 617-727-2200. Once again, that's 617-727-2200.
This is Bird Note. This young northern flicker is calling from the ground. Sound like trouble? Well, just because a young bird is on the ground doesn't necessarily mean it's sick or injured. At this time of year, juvenile northern flickers are leaving their nests. They fledge when they're 3 or 4 weeks old and almost as big as their parents, 11 or 12 inches long. Although you may picture a woodpecker high on a tree trunk, northern flickers, young and old, actually forage mostly on the ground. So this young flicker, just out of its nest, is poking around in the dirt and leaf litter, looking for ants and other insects. It makes test flights and, day by day, reaches higher and higher into the trees. But you'll still see it regularly, beak down in your lawn, probing for food. The best thing you can do for the young flicker, and other fledgling birds too, is to give the bird some space. And especially, keep your cats indoors. Next spring, this bird will probably be drumming on your roof, advertising for a mate. To learn what to do if you do find a sick or injured bird, visit our website, birdnote.org. We'll help you find your local wildlife rehabilitator. I'm Mary McCann. Bird Note's newsletter delivers the wonder and joy of birds directly to your inbox. Sign up at birdnote.org to get a weekly preview of our shows, stories, photos, and more.
WICN Public Radio is a proud partner of Audio Journal. Audio Journal provides news, information, and entertainment to visually and print-impaired residents of central Massachusetts. Audio Journal broadcasts are made possible through the use of a portion of WICN's broadcast frequency. 90.5 WICN is Worcester's only NPR affiliate and the voice of arts and culture in central Massachusetts. Visit WICN.org for more info.
Did you know ADA paratransit riders in Worcester, Auburn, Boylston, Leicester, Northborough, Oxford, Westboro, and West Boylston now have the option to schedule trips through the Worcester Regional Transit Authority's new online reservation system? Call customer service at 508-791-9782 or email paratransit@therta.com to begin scheduling your trip online.